Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is a Four Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Napsok.
And I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and this is our News and Cues episode, but we've got even more things than just news and cues. We've got news, cues, and year in reviews, Ken.
I'm excited to look back. Am I really? Yeah, no, I am. I don't know. It's a year. What a year. We're going to review it, and quite a Star Wars year. So yeah, that's coming. Some news, a little bit of news, a little bit of cues, and years of reviews. And we'll just tease this now. The return of a familiar voice to the Force Center landscape. Jennifer Landa checking in here in a bit. Before we get to all that exciting stuff, today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And a little bit later, we'll have a Force Center Recommends, an audiobook we think you should try out on us. It will also allow you to help the show in the process. But that's not all, Joseph. We have more.
That's right. That's not all. We also have another offer. This is from the great publishing company Insight Editions, and they publish a ton of great Star Wars books, Secrets of the Jedi, the Lightsaber Collection, Galaxy's Edge Cookbook, all sorts of different books like that. And they are offering 35% off across their website with a special Force Center code. This excludes collectibles, limited edition products, and already discounted products, but there's still a ton of great Star Wars books that do not fall under those categories. And this offer lasts until Friday, January 8th at midnight Pacific time. You can get your discount by entering the code FC35 or visit the Insight Editions website with this specific link, insighteditions.com/discount/FC35. Again, that's insighteditions.com/discount/FC35. So if you did not get all the Star Wars books you wanted for the holidays, well, why not now? That's it, Ken. That's the Insight Editions plug. Why not now?
Why not now? Get yourself gifts, which, quite frankly, is what I do all through the year. So at the end of the year, when people are like, what gifts do you want for the holidays? I'm like, I don't worry about me. I got everything I wanted this year. That's why I've been dead. Yes, but it's a great offer. And Joseph and I aren't just telling you and being part of this offer. We actually are customers, too. We really enjoy the Inside Edition stuff. Weather and sports coming up a little bit later here. As always, we like to catch up with ourselves and just kind of check in on Star Wars and life adventures. Holidays can be either really relaxing, stressful, all of the above. Joseph, how are you? How did your week go?
Good, good. It was a very relaxing holiday. You know, I'm very lucky to have a good life situation with my wife, Sarah. So we were able to relax a little bit, watch some different holiday movies. And, you know, we have a tradition of we open presents on Christmas morning between ourselves. And I think I've mentioned before, when the world is not experiencing a pandemic, we have this tradition where we set aside a certain amount of cash, a little cash in our hand, and go to a mall. And then we get all of our presents for one another that day. And it's fun to have those limitations. So this year we did the same thing, but with the internet. So it was really fun to see what presents in that short amount of time. Like, I think we gave ourselves like only 2 hours on the internet to be set loose. And I knew Star Wars, I knew Sarah would get me a Star Wars something because she always did. And the Star Wars thing that she got me this year was the Mandalorian Golden Book. And this is strangely something that I wanted very, very badly because I saw it when I was, you know, scrolling through Amazon for other Star Wars stuff. I love the little golden books, the way they have to just, you know, pour the story into this very, very distinct short story. And I haven't even read it yet. On Christmas morning, you know, a lot of emotions. I opened the golden book. And when I picked up the package, I was like, I think it's golden book. I hope it's Mandalorian. And I opened it up. And the first page is just the Mandalorian was alone. Oh. And I was like, I can't go through this emotional journey right now. I'm going to read this later. It's going to be great. It'll only take me 30 seconds to read. It's a golden book for children, but I'm happy to have it. So that was kind of my Star Wars holiday adventure. And then I had a lovely conversation with my wife where she's like, you know, it's one thing when I could walk down the toy aisle and see action figures, but now there's so many different Star Wars action figures from the retro to the vintage. And it's like, I don't even, you know what you might have scrolled off and got yourself. So if you want to go buy yourself some action figures on the internet for Christmas, go for it. So I'm going to do that still this weekend or this week.
Your wife just said, here's a dollar. Go see a Star Wars. That's awesome.
Go buy a Star Wars. Yeah. So that's kind of my holiday Star Wars adventures. How about you?
Well, first of all, I don't want to ever create extra work for your Force Center. You But I'm not saying that I don't want to hear Joseph Scribshaw reviews the golden book of Mandalorian.
It's going to be 2 hours, extremely critical.
I think you would bring a great eye to one of the base level themes that they're presenting to children. Anyways, not to create work for you. Now the groundswell of demands from the fans. For me, hey, you know, first of all, I want to acknowledge everyone who was so kind of reaching out, you know, last week shared the loss that Grace and I experienced and of our little dog that just was such a part of our lives. And we've all been there with pet loss. It's pretty specific, but loss of any kind, as I keep saying, There's a lot of loss this year, so we are not alone. So I appreciate all of you taking time from your tough year to reach out and tweet, or some people in the Discord just saying, hey, heard the news and condolences and everything. That kind of stuff helps and means a lot as part of the Positive Force Center community. So wouldn't want to miss an opportunity to say thank you to everyone. Because of that, this week was, without a little blue Christmas, Joseph, we had a little muted Christmas. It doesn't mean we didn't have some good times and just kind of relax. And we're part of that holiday tradition of Lord of the Rings becomes something we watch. But we also watched a lot of things, including This is Spinal Tap, which is one of my personal favorite things. I'm a big Christopher Guest fan and that kind of style of mockumentary, that kind of satire. But Grace had not only not seen it, God bless her and her age, had never really heard of it.
Wow.
So she's familiar with the Christopher Guest movies because I let her and she did Best in Show and everything she'd already been familiar with or knew they existed. But I've been doing the whole like, hey, let's just watch Fred Willard clips over and over again. You want to see that? So we watched Spinal Tap and it was a good experience because Grace is a singer. Her sister's a singer-songwriter. Her dad is a great guitarist and just grew up just putting classic rock music in front of them. Like acoustic guitars piss Grace off. And I love it. That's the key of my soul is acoustic guitars and a stool. She needs electric guitars and a lot of loud noises. And so she loved Spinal Tap from that regard and just and was blown away that Christopher Guest, Harry Shearer, Michael McKean, wrote those songs or were playing those songs and along with some musicians behind him there. So it was a good, fun, new Christmas tradition maybe of tapping into Spinal Tap. It was a lot of fun. So no Star Wars in that, but a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm sure if we dive deep enough, we could figure out some specific connection. But yeah, there's a lot of fear of loss for sure.
Yeah,
that's great. That is so great. Did Spinal Tap is such a weird film because it's such great timeless comedy, but it does then kind of morph and change over time. Like I first saw it in 91 with a bunch of my buddies, many of whom were in a high school rock and roll band together, and in Metallica's album with the mostly black cover with the faint little snake in the corner had just come out. And yeah. I kind of was like, I like Metallica, but I also get the like, you guys are getting a little on the older side to be like, nobody understands us. Our parents are mean, black darkness. And like, I was kind of getting okay with the comedy of that. But like for some of my friends on that first viewing was a little bit like that Shatner SNL sketch of like, get a life, like they had been sort of betrayed. Like, yeah. wait, that's what we actually like right now. And you were making fun of it years earlier.
Yeah. Yeah. No, look, for me, Tap, this will be Spinal Tap center for a second. It's not only just my style. I have different versions of my style of comedy, but that kind of style feeds my soul. But it is as a rock fan, and I know you are as well. Like I watched the Bee Gees doc this week, and I love documentaries about bands. Spinal Tap still is like the best documentary about a band in a lot of ways. Like they're not creating it. They're just rewriting the wheel of every rock band. So there's a part of me when watching that, like it's not even that it's funny. It's just like, yep. This is the tale of a rock band.
Yeah. No, I mean, the lyrics are funny of all the songs, but otherwise they're like solid songs marching through that period of history of rock and roll.
Yeah. So, so we did that. So that was good. No real Star Wars adventures other than started my journey, and I know you did too, into the High Republic. At the time of this recording, you and I are about the same length into the book Light of the Jedi by Charles Soule. And Joseph, I don't know if we want to just tease early feelings, but I'm so excited and love what I've read so far.
Yeah. The spoiler review for me so far is everything that I wanted and more. I don't think it's too much of a spoiler to say, every time we talked about the High Republic, what I was excited about was the possibility of really diving into a lot of different perspectives from different Jedi. Who are they when everything is functioning well? They're not in lockstep and they have really different perspectives. And there's so much going on in the beginning of this book. But just that one thing that I really hope for in the High Republic is so rich of just detailed, interesting ideas about unique Jedi, and I'm enjoying it so much so far.
Yeah, it's been an absolute thrill. Very cinematic is what I keep kind of saying to myself alone when I'm reading. Time didn't permit me to dive too much deeper into it. Like I said, about 100 or so pages in, but I was so excited. Eventually I got to a real good, excited lather on this series that I think I started in it. Okay, this sounds fun. I am just blown away how excited I am. And it's first book. It's the first pages. We get so much more content to come. So hopefully you can keep the feeling going, but I already want figures.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, that it gets to the heart of why we like action figures, because they are this encapsulation of, you know, making an idea manifest, making an idea you can hold in your hand. And there are already a couple of Jedi I want to hold in my hand from this book.
Yep. Absolutely. So that's part of the look ahead in Star Wars. But now, Joseph, let's maybe take a peek back a year in review. And look, we could not do this without our friend, our co-host, our just a key member of Force Center, Jennifer Landa. Joseph, you know, after the birth of her second Padawan, she took a step back, but she's still in our heart. She's still part of the show here. All of our episodes and appearances are in our back catalog, happy beeps, all that stuff. But, you know, we really wanted to hear from her this time, Joseph, and we get to, yeah?
Yeah. We wanted to be sure to reach out because there has been, you know, there's always Star Wars news for us to be excited about. But this year in particular, right at the end of the year with The Mandalorian, not only being, you know, the second season of this big show, but having so many different kind of big ideas and characters attached to it. We really wanted to get Jennifer's take and unique perspective on The Mandalorian. And then that Disney Investor Day, which, you know, we've been talking about for years with Jennifer when she was able to be a regular co-host with us. And we were all, like, you know, sitting around in person talking. We all talked about the kind of the hope for a day like the Disney Investor Day, where they said for the next few years, here is some of what you're going to get. So we really wanted to hear Jennifer's thoughts on both those things.
Absolutely. So up first is Jennifer's look back at The Mandalorian Season 2. Take it away, Jennifer.
When I watched the first season of The Mandalorian in 2019, it blew my mind. Baby Yoda was one of the greatest kept secrets, and for me, it will go down as one of the most memorable reveals in Star Wars history. I knew that the first season was going to be really tough to top. So Favreau and Filoni dug into their Star Wars toy box and pulled out some of the fans' most beloved characters to play with. Before I share my reaction, I will say that it seemed like the consensus online was that this season was a raging success. Many fans were saying that it was better than the sequel trilogy and that this show was the way Star Wars should have come out the gate back in 2015. But I disagree. I really like this season, but for some reason, it didn't quite hit me the same way that the first season did, and I'm not sure why. Could it be related to the fact that we're in a pandemic and I haven't left the house in 9 months? Maybe. Or maybe it's because I haven't slept more than 3 hours a night for the past 16 months. Well, that could be it. Or perhaps it's because I watched every episode practically on mute so I didn't disturb my baby that I often fell asleep throughout the episodes. Oh, that could be it. Here's what I'll say. I watched the HBO series The Undoing in 1 week, and each episode left me wide awake with countless theories running through my brain. I don't want to be the embodiment of 2020, so let's talk about the good stuff first. I am amazed at how cinematic each episode looked. The Mandalorian is bringing the Star Wars movie-like experience every week, and all I can think about is how this must be what George Lucas had in mind when he tried to get his Star Wars show produced many, many years ago. The acting is phenomenal. Timothy Oliphant as Cobb Vanth was a joy to watch. Bill Burr as Mayfield brought humor and a realness that fit well within this world. Those dark troopers were super scary, and I loved it. Seeing Katie Sackhoff as Bo-Katan felt like the best kind of fan service, and when she, Sasha Banks, and Ming-Na Wen were on screen together, it was explosive. Pedro Pascal as Mando has made this show a success. I saw someone write that Pedro Pascal is suffering from severe back injury from carrying the entire Star Wars franchise. It made me chuckle, because it's kind of true. It's his performance as Din Djarin that is the glue that holds the Mandalorian together. And when we finally got that intense scene in the second to last episode with Mando without his helmet on, I cheered. And then I got sad, because it made me think of how much we are missing by not seeing this character's face. Ah, the nuance, the subtle reactions, there's so much in the eyes that we're not getting. Which brings me to the bad. I felt like this season was a little bit more predictable. Each mission felt the same, and because the show is episodic, I found it difficult to get fully invested with a story. It was incredibly entertaining to watch, beautifully shot, and the music is trailblazing, but as the season progressed, I began to wonder what the show would feel like if it had a more complex ongoing plot. My feelings are mixed, because the reason they're able to introduce all these weird new characters is because it's an anthology series. The format made it possible to feature characters like Cobb Vanth and Boba Fett. I did feel like the second half of the season began to have more of a continuous arc, but ultimately, the show is supposed to be a serial. This format, it really worked for me in the first season, but this season, I wanted to learn more about these characters and their relationships. I won't even go into how I feel about Ahsoka Tano. Ah, you guys, there's just so much to unpack with that. And Ken and Joseph have so generously given me the mic, and I don't want them to regret it. And I won't get into the weeds about Frog Lady and her eggs being eaten, but it is interesting that a show that beautifully portrays a relationship between a child and a parent could treat a mother character without the same level of care. Okay, all right, it's not fair for me to nitpick. Yeah, I know. You know, overall, this show was amazing. The second half of the season was great, in part because Pedro Pascal took his helmet off. Just joking. No, it was because we had a core cast of characters on a mission together. It made it thrilling to watch, and I wanted to see how they deal with a skank and the scud pie. There is so much to love in The Mandalorian, and while I may be an armchair critic, this show has my heart. It is still everything I wanted Star Wars to be after watching Return of the Jedi as a kid. Look, if The Mandalorian could get me excited about the return of Boba Fett, I'd say this show is pretty magical. And I can't wait to see what Mando and the gang are up to next.
All right, there you go, Joseph. She's pretty honest about time, commitment, and feelings, and great joy. What do you think about Jennifer's take on Mandalorian season two?
Yeah, man, you know, it was just great to hear Jennifer's perspective as a fan, as an individual, but also for I think for myself to always remember to take that step back of you and I have a life at the moment where we can watch an episode of The Mandalorian 3-4 times, yeah. You know, freeze frame, dig into each line and look at it from that perspective, you know, and it's so great to just remember in here that lots of people like Jennifer are like, I love Star Wars with all my heart and I have time to watch it once. And that is, you know, there are different ways to receive Star Wars. And I think, you know, things need to be effective when you watch them once and when you really dive into all the nooks and crannies. So it's just great to hear that. The honesty and the humor with which Jennifer set the stage for, remember, this is how I'm seeing The Mandalorian, is just so great.
Yeah, you and I so value Jennifer's perspective and experiences, so different than ours. There's some similarities in terms of generations and how we view Star Wars, but she just brings so much different things to the table that we miss weekly, and we know a lot of you do too. But I did love, and she handled it so great in a thread, but the Frog Lady situation and just, I thought Jennifer's, you know, you and I both kind of love a lot of things about that, and we're okay with things because, I don't know, maybe of course we would, because we're comics, we're comedians, we're writers, we're men. You and I aren't giving birth anytime soon to eggs in a canister. But I really love Jennifer's perspective of just like, hey, a little more care and nuance for mothers in Star Wars is something she's always been talking about. And I'm glad she mentioned that here this week.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think the Frog Lady thing is complex and worthy of being looked at from lots of different perspectives. But I think a valuable perspective that Jennifer has shared for years on Force Center is, you know, to not just look at something like Frog Lady as one episode of The Mandalorian and, you know, parsing exactly what happens in the episode. And does the comedy and the drama work together and all those conversations we can have, but pulling back and just going in the grand scheme of Star Wars, father and child relationships have been extremely central. And then even when mother relationships sometimes should be, you know, raised to a much higher level and be in the spotlight more, they're not. And that's just one of the things that we really need, I think, in Star Wars on screen is to spend some real quality time. You know, it was one of the things that we loved about Rise of Skywalker is centering Leia a little bit more as a maternal figure. But, you know, I think we need even more of that. And having Jennifer's always been a great champion for that.
Yeah. And for me personally, just a great reminder to sometimes make sure I'm watching definitely Star Wars from my own eyes and my own journey and my own perspectives, but also make sure to have a 360 view on it just to kind of, you know, keep the table wide open here. Something we try to do at Force Center. She's going to touch upon it in a little bit, but there's also, you know, that name Ahsoka. And I appreciate her honesty on that too. Again, more to come here, but you know, it's in there.
Yeah. Yeah. In terms of what really did speak to Jennifer and work, I think I agree with her very much about the power of Pedro Pascal's face,
yes.
The power of his eyes. He's a great, phenomenal actor, and he does such a great job in season two of both times that we see him with the helmet all the way off that he looks like somebody who has always worn a helmet. Just emotionally, I know people are like analyzing his eye movements and things like that, but there is just a power to a guy who is already has his emotions locked down and they're being exploded by the events he's going through, but also just feels totally nude without that mask on. And I think, you know, one of the great things to me is the way I interpret the end of season two of Mandalorian is he has made a choice to step away from that creed, and that was not a one time only take the helmet off. I think we're going to get a lot more of Pedro Pascal's face and evolving emotions in season three.
Yeah, and you and I, we should address, we will be maybe talking a little bit more, whether it's a big deep dive or just a segment on a future show about the Disney Gallery, the look at season two. They approached it a little different this year with one kind of special, one kind of documentary. At the time of this recording, I've been able to watch it. You've not been able to watch it. We want to address that, but we did see Pedro on set a lot and a lot more in season two. And I'm glad Jennifer brought that up because not just his face, his presence. This is nothing. I want to make sure nothing against Lateef Crowder and Brendan Wayne and anyone else who helped build the Mandalorian in season one and season two as a character. But it makes a big difference to have Pedro and his thoughts and his choices and his perspective and just his energy. And I think that's why, for me, looking back, a lot of the little moments in season two really resonated with me than perhaps more than they did in season one, because he was able to embody the character a little bit more and a lot more, quite frankly. And he's just such an amazing actor. I've been doing a Game of Thrones rewatch again and just kind of got through season four, and I never stopped being moved or blown away by what he brought to the character of Oberyn Martell, a book character that he just exploded on into a next level. So I'm glad she pointed that out. Pedro's face. We need more.
More Pedro's face. Yeah. And I think, you know, that's going to continue to be a discussion about The Mandalorian. We'll see how it goes. We'll see where other Disney Plus shows go of There's lots of different approaches to Star Wars storytelling. There is the more episodic. There's the, you know, kind of, I think Mandalorian is trying to be very minimal in its in its dialogue. It's very tip of the iceberg storytelling of, you know, characters say exactly what they need to in maybe hint at an emotion, except for Moff Gideon. But the Wikipedia page of Star Wars villains in a way I still enjoy. But I think this is one of the things that makes me excited for all of the different projects announced by Disney Investor Day. If the only Disney Plus show, if Star Wars television was Mandalorian, we'd kind of keep going back and forth of, Do we want a little bit more in-depth, serialized, you know, story where we are following Mando's adventures, you know, not week by week, but he's going on one big adventure and we're going, you know, even deeper into the character, or this mix that the show is doing now where in the last two seasons, there's big picture stories, but there are adventures of the week and some episodes dive deep into emotions and some are just very minimal. And I think I'm excited that that's a fun discussion to have now, but we're going to have so many other shows. That's not the only discussion.
That's not the only discussion. We are going to have other shows. And Jennifer is here again to talk about Disney Investor Day. Let's hear Jennifer's thoughts on that big day.
Can you hear that? That's me eating crow. I swore on this show that I could care less about a Boba Fett movie, that I would rather see anything else other than a Boba Fett movie. I groaned, at the mention of that Mandalorian crawling out of the Sarlacc pit and onto the big screen. But then the new Mandalorian happened, and Temuera Morrison's performance showed me the depth that this character could have. And then when it was announced that Robert Rodriguez was involved, I thought I was hallucinating from lack of sleep. It's happened, trust me. Star Wars and Robert Rodriguez is the pairing I did not know I needed, but now it's all I want. Not only do I want a Boba Fett show now, but it's the thing I'm most excited about on the Twin Suns horizon. Wait, no, I spoke too soon. Have you watched the Andor sizzle reel? OMG, I am amazed by the sheer scope of this show. So many extras, costumes, incredible sets that they are building. This series is going to have the look and feel of a Rogue One prequel, and with Diego Luna at the helm, who brings intensity yet vulnerability. Oh my gosh, creature guru. Neil Scanlan is in his workshop like a freaking Santa, like a Star Wars Santa Claus. We are getting a Star Wars smorgasbord with all this new content. What I like about the Book of Boba Fett and Andor is that we're getting a deep dive into these characters. These shows are character studies, and there is nothing that I love more. These shows are the kinds of series that I initially wanted the Star Wars standalone films to be. I thought Solo really delivered on its origin story, so I'm glad that Disney Plus is becoming the place for Lucasfilm to tell these kinds of stories. Let's talk about some of the other projects in the works, shall we? Rangers of the New Republic sounds interesting, but I'm hoping it will be more of an ensemble piece. Cara Dune is a great character, but Gina Carano has shared some problematic views online that makes it difficult for me to separate the actor from the role. It would just be weird not to feature her in the show, considering she's a New Republic Marshal. But if it's an ensemble show, you know, it'll be easier for me to maybe get on board with this one. Ahsoka. Oh, Ahsoka. I am a fan of Rosario Dawson's work. She's currently embroiled in a lawsuit that, you know, if it's true what the person is claiming that she did, it would make me impossible to overlook it, you know, and want to tune into this show. Now, that being said, I love the character of Ahsoka. I also love Ashley Eckstein's portrayal of Ahsoka. She is such a beloved character, both the actress and the animated persona, that I had a really tough time with Rosario Dawson's portrayal as T'Gruta. There is something that Ashley brings to the character of Ahsoka that I felt was missing in Rosario's performance. I liked that Rosario gave Ahsoka a toughness and an edge to her. It makes sense, you know, for the character. But I felt like there was just that little, and you can't see me, but I'm like putting my fingers together. Just a little magic, a little bit of magic was missing. And it's not fair, because as a fan of the Clone Wars, I will forever associate the character with the animated voice. But I'm hoping that the Ahsoka live action series will change my mind and make me not compare the actors. It is possible. Look at Alden Ehrenreich. I never thought he'd be able to fill Harrison Ford's shoes, but he showed that he didn't have to. He took the essence of the character and he made it his own Han Solo. All this being said, Dave Filoni is the showrunner of Ahsoka, so I know it's going to be good. The character of Ahsoka has been close to his heart, so obviously the show will be too. When I heard Hayden Christensen would make an appearance as Darth Vader in the Obi-Wan Kenobi series, I was like, all right. I don't know why, but you know, maybe when you have all this other Star Wars content, not everything is going to shake you to your core, you know? Speaking of, I would love to watch The Bad Batch, but I just don't have the time. When I watched the sizzle reel, I felt old and I felt so far behind in my Star Wars experience. I never really watched Rebels. I've heard wonderful things. I didn't watch Star Wars Resistance, you know, and that's okay. I'm at the point in my fandom where I can recognize that not everything Star Wars is going to be must-see TV for me. It would be fun if my daughter got into it, but, you know, she's a little young. Because the truth is, I only get 1 hour of TV a night. It's like I'm a child. I get 1 hour of TV a night if I'm lucky. So would I rather watch a new episode of The Book of Boba Fett or an episode of The Bad Batch? These are the kinds of decisions that the adult Jennifer has to make. These are tough decisions. Okay, I'm running out of time, so I'll quickly address the rest. Lando, love it. If it's Donald Glover donning the cape, we're in good hands. I've been a fan of Justin Simien's work and his podcast. It's really, really good. So I think he and Donald Glover could create something really special. While I want The Mandalorian to move away from his episodic roots, I'd love to see the Lando series actually lean into that. Every episode, Lando could have a different adventure, you know, a different rendezvous with a droid. It could be so fun. I'm not going to even go into The Acolyte because I haven't had the time to research. And I haven't watched Russian Doll. It's also in my queue. But, you know, I hear it's really good. If we could get Natasha Lyonne in space, oh, well, I'm all in on that. Lastly, Rogue Squadron. I was not excited when I read this announcement. I mean, I always liked the Rogue Squadron video game back in the day. Was it Nintendo 64? But I always had a hard time getting into the X-Wing book series. I really had a hard time with it. I tried many, many times. But then I saw director Patty Jenkins' pitch for why she's directing this new Star Wars film. And now I am on board. Jenkins posted a video of herself talking about her father, who was a pilot. He lost his life in service. And because of that tragedy, she has always wanted to make the greatest fighter pilot movie of all time, basically to honor her father. I'm getting emotional just talking about it. You know, she showed so much passion and thoughtfulness in her video that it just made me say, okay, all right, you know, this Rogue Squadron movie is going to be so good because she's bringing her life to this movie. She's bringing her life story, her history. And because of that, I think that this Star Wars film is going to have a totally different energy and tone than the other Star Wars films we've gotten in the past. And I can't wait. It always feels a little weird to get excited about Disney Investor Day. It makes the relationship between Star Wars and its fans feel so transactional and businesslike. I'm not naive. I know that's how us fans are seen, not just with Star Wars, but, you know, all these properties, the way that they talk about the fans. Well, you know, we are consumers and Disney is hoping that we will buy whatever they're selling. But then when they start showing the behind the scenes featurettes and I see the creators, the actors, the sculptors, the costume designers behind these Star Wars stories, I remember that these films and shows are more than just content. They offer a wonderful escape from our cruel world. They remind us the importance of having hope during dark times. They are fantastical, whimsical, mystical, and magical. And it's why I personally can never have too much Star Wars.
All right, there you go. That's a big look because there's a lot of shows, Joseph. The first thing I got to talk about, I was listening to this when she sent the files across to us. I was making some breakfast, having a cup of coffee, getting ready. And I get to her reaction to Hayden Christensen, and I almost spit out my coffee. I just was laughing so much. In a good way. I understand it. So where do you want to dive in on Jennifer's thoughts on all the stuff that came on Disney Investor Day?
Is so many great thoughts. I love the honesty. I love the perspective that I think Jennifer is really communicating of not all of us have time for all Star Wars, and there's nothing wrong with that. Highlighting how much that this, again, what I was saying about Disney Investor Day is I think this is what's great about what is coming down the line is, hey, if there's a Star Wars that comes out and it's not for you, wait 6 months and there'll be another one that might be more up your alley. And I love that Jennifer is highlighting. These are the ones that I'm excited about. These are the ones I might not be able to make time for. These are the ones that I'm on the fence about, but we'll see. And I think that's just such a great approach. We don't all have to be excited for every Star Wars. And then just on a personal note, having gone through this journey with Jennifer over the years, when I was emailing her to set up these recordings, she emailed back already, before I even heard these, that she's like, I'm thrilled about Boba Fett. And I literally, alone in my home, pumped my fist because I've been excited about Boba Fett for years. And Jennifer's been like, I don't know. She's definitely been one of those people who, didn't really catch the Boba Fett fever back in the day. And it just made me so happy that,
yeah,
exactly what she said. Once they got Temuera Morrison in there, once the writers and the directors and the actors started, in the stunt coordinator started to dig in and make a character out of the Mystique, then she's excited. That was just a great moment of Star Wars nerdery where my Star Wars buddy Jennifer Lando was also excited for Boba Fett.
Yeah, hey, it shows that you could change your thoughts and your opinions. Don't hold on to them so dearly, meaning like, hey, allow yourself to grow as a fan or allow them to surprise you as a fan. I guess I'd say I'm on the fence sometimes about Boba Fett. Like, I get it. I got it. And then I did want more. And then you get what you get and you're like, oh, all right. And then, Robert Rodriguez, he's just kind of won me over even a little bit more about his passion for the character. So I'm with Jennifer on that there. And regarding what you said about, just having time, and Jennifer's admitted now, like, hey, I got about an hour a day, maybe to sit down with anything, not just Star Wars, anything. So there, that's why it's harder to record Force Center stuff. And that's part of what's been going on, just so the fans are aware. But for her to be like, I saw the Bad Batch thing and I would love to, I can't. I think that's very real. And then we always talk about that buffet, and you and I love all the things the buffet are offering. We're very fortunate to be in a position where, that's kind of what I get to do sometimes. I get to go, hey, Grace, I'm going to go in my room and work on Star Wars, as a fan first and make it part of our weekly work routine. You and I are just very fortunate. But and Jennifer, at various points in life, has been in that position too. But for her to just be like, got it, I can't be there for you. Have fun, Bad Batch. Have fun. I thought it was, again, very honest.
Yeah, no, and I think it is a reminder that we all have different, time constrictions in our lives, and you are a huge Star Wars fan if you love any part of Star Wars, and if you don't have time for one part and you want to know what's going on, read Wikipedia and like, okay, that's what happened in Bad Batch. Great. I'm caught up. And I also just think, try not to yell at the clouds is people with gray in our beard as much. But yeah. I remember the experience of seeing a Star Trek film or a James Bond film or any number of different kind of genre things I liked in the theater and went, well, I liked that part of it, but I didn't like that other part of it. Maybe in several years from now, I will like the next one more. And what a great time we're in where there's so much Star Wars coming and you can just go, that one's for me, that one's not for me. Great, what's next?
What's next? All right. So the beginning of this, you know, she admitted to eating a little crow in the Boba Fett thing. I don't want to serve anyone crow that they don't deserve to eat. I don't want to come from that point of view in life, not just Star Wars, where I want to be like, ha, are you wrong? But I, you know, I'm very curious to check back in after Kenobi to see what Jennifer thinks about Hayden, Anakin, and him being back.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And see if it speaks to her or not.
Yeah. And you know what? It might not. And that is okay. Crow is a dish best served rubbery and feathery, I think. unless you have any other thoughts, you have anything left, a reaction to Jennifer's reaction?
No, I think my only other thought is sharing her Cassian Andor excitement. And we're going to be able to talk about that because that's one of our news features. But it's just great to be able to hear from Jennifer. It was great that she had this time to share her thoughts. And, you know, I totally understand everything going on in her life and that whole pandemic thing. We look forward whenever we can to get her perspective and just always a reminder of how much, you know, in our years of sitting in person doing these podcasts together and discussing back and forth on the air, are we excited about Boba Fett? Are we excited about Rogue One? What do we think about this and all that? How much she changed my perception of Star Wars, and I'm really grateful for it.
Yeah, and we understand, too, we have, over the years, last couple of years, got some new listeners or, you know, even with Mandalorian, some new ears come swinging through. Some of you might not be super familiar with Jennifer here in Force Center. Maybe you know her from a YouTube channel and her TikTok videos or something going on right now. That's Jennifer. We just adore her. She's such a key part of this team. And you can go back, like I said, and check out her back catalog of Happy Beeps episodes, which, look, I listen to our shows a little bit. I listen to Star Wars Counseling when I had my old daily job where I'd go into work. It was a joy to put on, you know, Joseph, your show and all this stuff. But I got to say, due respect to you and me, Happy Beeps is the only thing on this network that I would listen to a few times. Jennifer's so good and made me just want to be a better broadcaster. And if you guys haven't listened to, go back and listen to the episodes. And by the way, sometimes we know there's some still broken episode links in our catalog because of just an error that happened when we switched servers. I try to correct those when I can. Let me know if you go and click on a Jennifer Landa Happy Beeps and it cuts off or something like that. Jennifer actually put a lot of time in. I reached out to her and she helped me repair a lot of those old audio files. But if one slips in, let me know because I want you all to experience the glory that is Jennifer Landa's takes on Star Wars. All right, Joseph, you mentioned it, but let's dive into the news. Not a ton, which you'd expect in this holiday week, but a couple of things we want to discuss here. The first one up is this kind of headline. And again, a shout out to the fine folks at Star Wars News Net. They always do a great job collecting the stories. They got a great podcast themselves, the Resistance Broadcast. Check it out. I want to shout out them because in this type of week where you're not getting the big headlines, it's great to go to a great news source and just kind of look out in the galaxy and see what's there. And they highlighted this story about Rainn Roberts being more in the spotlight. This comes from, I think, initially a Reddit thing, the Star Wars Leaks Reddit. I don't really spend time on Reddit, gray in my beard and whatnot. But this idea that Rainn Roberts, who is the Lucasfilm VP of Film Development and has been a Story Group member now for a bit, is co-developing The Acolyte with Leslie Headland and then working on a future slate of movies. Future slate of movies, not too surprising for me. Nor is the co-developing The Acolyte, Joseph, but I really enjoyed that news, and I want to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, yeah. Now, what I think this came from is her bio on actual, you know, Lucasfilm or StarWars.com, I can't remember which, was updated with this information, and I think somebody on Reddit pointed it out. So, you know, this is not random Reddit theories. This is just somebody on Reddit noticed that something was legitimately updated on a legitimate website. This was really fun for me because I don't, diving into who's on the story group all that often. You know, some people like Matt Martin has a, you know, really great, really public Twitter presence. So, you know, Matt is really very, I'm aware of Matt's thoughts in a good way on Twitter. So that was fun for me to just look into Rainn Roberts. And there was a couple things in here that was really great for me. Big picture, just co-developing The Acolyte of Leslie Headland is clearly, from interviews that we've seen, somebody who knows Star Wars, loves Star Wars. But I like this approach that seems to be developing of Lucasfilm wanting to bring in new voices. So you get that new of like, what do you love in Star Wars? What angle, what has never been done you want to do? But then having somebody who is, you know, in the story group, is invested in the whole history of Star Wars to give that perspective of the old too, which I think that's just kind of a necessary ingredient. So co-developing the Acolyte makes perfect sense to me. And then just from some of the stuff I looked up about Rainn Roberts, she is a filmmaker herself. She made a short film called It's Snowing Outside that is winning some awards. And then there's a great little interview I found with her, a spotlight interview, I believe on the Lucasfilm website as well, where she talked about loving the themes of family, talking about watching Wizard of Oz a lot when she grew up, and also really loving Indiana Jones and watching that constantly when she grew up, and that she had a particular passion for quest stories. And that made me really interested in not only what ideas is she highlighting as she was helping, you know, give notes on all the films that have already come out from Disney Lucasfilm, but like Leslie Headland so focused on that in that great YouTube interview we saw where her pitch was sort of like, it's an adventure and they have to go from planet to planet. And it's that kind of map hopping Indiana Jones vibe. So that was an interesting crossing of the overlap of the Venn diagram between interests of Rainn Roberts and Leslie Headland. That makes me even more excited for The Acolyte.
That, sir, is some great information. I'm going to give you a well said and hand clap. I had not seen that interview. That gets me excited. That really gets me excited. I got to tell you, just a syncing up of ideas. And look, she's had her hand in development of every single Star Wars movie so far. But, you know, to what degree, you don't know. And without a doubt, J.J. Abrams is I'm going to go to Santa Monica and make my movie, for better or worse. Ryan, even though he worked hand in hand with a lot of Lucasfilm people, it's still his movie. There's that kind of stuff. To have her kind of slide forward a little bit on that show and to maybe just be in sync with Leslie Headland over some of the things that excite them about Star Wars. That's some really great ideas there. Great stuff. I'm really glad you pulled that information. And look, you and I, without a doubt, there is this, I don't know how to describe it, especially this week, that, you know, the makers of Star Wars behind the scenes has always been a thing. You and I know, and everyone knows, Joe Johnston, Phil Tippett and Gary Kurtz, all those names are just part of the Star Wars story.
Yeah.
The story group and everything that popped up, it the job is never what people really think it is in general. I think a lot of listeners might know exactly, you know, they're there to keep tabs. I had someone who would say, like, the story group's job is to make sure cereal boxes look okay. Like, you know, which is a small version of it. They do a lot. The comics, Galaxy's Edge, all those kind of things. But they don't sit there and go, here's what the stories are going to be. That was never what it was supposed to be. So there's a weird obsession with the group, without a doubt. And sometimes it's fun, and sometimes it can be annoying, and sometimes it's part a sport a part of a controversy or something like that in the space. Rainn Roberts to me is someone who's always been there. I consider her kind of a secret weapon along with Carrie Beck, and I think Rainn's, I haven't checked, but I think she's on Twitter just quietly in her corner, just doing her job, just doing her thing. I almost don't, I almost don't want to highlight it. Like, let her be, let her do amazing work. So it's without a doubt interesting, but this is to me good news of someone kind of stepping forward and more into the spotlight and more into a position of influence over the stories we're about to take in, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And this, I pull it up. It is Lucasfilm. And if you just Google Spotlight Rainn Roberts, it's a real short interview. It looks like is May 5th, 2018. You know, she's on the story group. And I think you're right. I think sometimes people picture the story group like a Jedi Council sitting in chairs and, you know, Padawans come before them and thumbs up, thumbs down, you know. And I don't, you know, that's not, yeah, I don't think it's, I think it is a complex, nuanced thing to, you know, say, hey, I know you're developing the film and it's got this element of family. Here's how we've talked about family before in Star Wars. What if you highlighted this element? What if you decreased this element? Like, it's just, you know, creative discussion. But the other great thing in this article is she's not just on the story group. She's a senior vice president of development. So it is her job to give thoughts on shaping stories. There's a great description of her typical day. So if you're the kind of fan who likes to know what's going on behind the scenes and you're wondering, you know, what does she actually do? She's got a paragraph where she actually tells you literally what she does. And it's great.
Check it out. So more information, and I can't wait for more details on The Acolyte. It's becoming more and more something I'm looking to. But a series I am looking forward to, Jennifer mentioned it as well, you mentioned it, is Andor. And Diego Luna, who, of course, as we know, plays Cassian Andor, had a little something to say on the layers and the production of the series in an interview with The Hollywood Reporter. Of course, as often, these Star Wars folks sit down to discuss something else. And, of course, it's always going to turn to Star Wars. So check out the link if you want to talk, hear him talking more about his other projects and stuff that he's currently working on that's coming out before Andor. But he is currently shooting Andor, as we saw that behind-the-scenes featurette. So here's some of the things, and we can discuss it. Joseph Luna said the style of shooting is more traditional and said it reminded him of making Rogue One, and talked about how the 12-episode format will allow them to explore the layers of the story and characters, citing the sacrifice of the rebel informant Tivik. He didn't say Tivik's name, though, and a name I wish I said in a trivia contest one point. he cited that as something that they can go behind. And says it feels like we're doing a long movie. So on some hand, I'd say, Joseph, none of that's new things to us, but it's a good comforting reassurance.
Yeah, absolutely. I think bringing in the murder of Tivik, I think that is such an important moment in Rogue One. And it establishes Cassian quickly of he has to make desperate last minute choices that are morally upsetting to him because he is willing to do anything for the bigger picture cause. And I think just the more confirmation that that is what the show is wrestling. Is this character who knows that the big picture morality of taking down the Empire is absolutely necessary. But what does this poor person go through in pursuit of that? Great.
Yeah. Yeah. Great indeed. And I'm going to say this carefully. I want to get your thoughts here on shooting a non-volume type of show, at least mostly. We know the volumes is great tech. They're building, you know, two or three more studios around the world, and they should be proud of it. I think The Mandalorian is a great technological achievement, and it's only going to get better and better. I say that time and time again because sometimes, I don't know, I poke at it a little bit. I think that's only because I grew up original trilogy kid. I grew up a different era of filmmaking, but I think it's gotten better. We all know the Phantom Menace had the most practical models in it, so I think you all know where I'm going with that. I, for whatever reason, Joseph, I'm just like, yes, please. I'm glad this is shot on location or bigger sets and has maybe more, just a grander feel to it, where sometimes Mandalorian, for me, it feels like it was shot on a VR stage. I'm being very general. I don't want to sound too down on it, but for me, that makes me more excited.
Yeah, I mean, I think the volume seems to work really well, particularly in season one of Mandalorian. Again, I agree with you. I think season two gets more advanced and harder to tell what is what. But it works really well when you're in kind of an open environment and you need to see that horizon, you know, and it's, you know, real photography, but it's put in this, you know, weird volume space. I wonder if for Cassian Andor, there is just budget stuff going on that, you know, Favreau is like, oh, great. Yeah, I've been developing this tech. I want to try it out. I know you can't spend that much money on Mandalorian because what if just nobody signs up for Disney Plus? It's a big swing. So let me do. I've got this creative way that I'm really, you know, creatively and technologically invested in proving I can do this. Great. Now there's a little bit more success. There's a little bit more budget maybe for Cassian Andor. But I also think it might be creatively driven because the volume really does, for me, seem to work well for big open skies are showing more environment behind somebody. And just from the little sets we saw in that sizzle reel and just the nature of what Cassian Andor is, if it is a gritty spy movie, I would imagine you're dealing with lots of tight, confined spaces full of shadows. And you really need those to be real. Like, it seems like Mandalorian, you know, when they need a hallway, they build a hallway.
Yeah.
And I think Cassian Andor, I'm sure, is going to have some big, amazing shots of, you know, cityscapes and in, you know, natural environments. But I think a lot of it is going to be slinking around in the dark and in confined spaces. And you need sets for that. And I wonder if that's a part of it.
Yeah. And look, the budget, Mandalorian season one did not have the budget it wanted. Season two probably had a little more, but you know, as there's that part in the riot and the director in the Jedi, the Last Jedi documentary, where they're talking, I think Ron Bergman, or might even be someone else, I can't remember, is just talking about the budget of Last Jedi and like, hey, it's a big box, but it's still a box. We still have concerns. We still have choices to make. So the volume and a lot of what happened in season one, particularly Mandalorian, absolutely has something to do with budgets. And Andor probably has those limitations as well. But I want to give credit to the, you know, that shot of Din Djarin looking out into the sun in chapter 11, you know, in the, you know, across the ocean as the sun sets and Katie Sackhoff and everyone blow up the boat, like beautiful stuff.
Beautiful. Yeah.
But even they felt at times they needed to go out to Simi Valley off the 118 freeway for some bigger kind of things. And it's just a personal preference. Makes me excited. Doesn't necessarily mean the story's going to be better or great. I mean, you could have all the money in the world and all the great locations and sets. You still got to get it right. And I trust they'll get it right because of what the approach is. So,
yeah. And I believe they said something about, you know, I believe in that Disney Investor Day presentation, Kathleen Kennedy said that they had built more volumes. And I think there is some stuff that is in a volume in London. I think it just sounds like there's more practical sets as well.
Yeah. And again, I was made foolish by the Disney Gallery season one look where I was like, oh, my God, that was the volume. So I think everyone, I'm over apologizing, but you know, Hal Hickel, don't get mad at me. I'm just excited about Andor. I'm so excited about Andor. And
yeah,
you know, I want Crix Madine to show up. All right, that's one of my
Crix Madine would be great. I do think one thing, because we haven't had, you know, as much time to talk about Andor, because that sizzle reel came out with that Disney Investor Day, which was like, you know, so much information. The sizzle reel looks great, but I don't think that any fans should sleep on their excitement about Mon Mothma, right? Just the fact that she's there is, you know, not only this great real life story with Genevieve O'Reilly, but, you know, getting to spend more time with that character and knowing that Mon Mothma is a character who is going to be having to make hard choices about what the rebellion is. But then Cassian's the one who has to go and do it and go execute those things. That could be some really interesting espionage and moral Star Wars storytelling.
Yeah, you know what? I don't want to extend our show too long today. I almost think, seriously, it's not a joke or a you know, hey, everyone gets a Star Wars story kind of observation. But Mothma, the series, at any point could have been something they could have done to me, because that's such a fantastic character. That's the depth of that character goes back to even the Return of the Jedi novel. I've said before, I'll say it again, go back and read that novel. The description of Mothma, you look at it and go, oh, this is the plot of Rebels. Got it. Dave drew upon this a lot for Rebels. Just the description of Mothma as a character, and for Genevieve O'Reilly, like you said, to come back from cut scenes in the prequels, Revenge of the Sith, and get to play this character. I almost don't want to build up expectations that she's a main player in this show, but I feel as though she should and hope, and I agree with you on that there. So great, great pull of recognizing Mothma.
Excellent. I'm happy to discuss Andor more. I'm so excited about this one.
So excited indeed. Hey, let's get to our Force Center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. This one kind of sets up what we're talking about on Thursday, Joseph.
That is right. We are recommending the book, The Legends of Luke Skywalker. This is an interesting book, Ken, that you and I love some stories from and are challenged by other stories, but it's a great Star Wars book because it's all point of view. It's all what people think they saw or think they know of Luke Skywalker. And that really does dovetail into the episode we're going to do on Thursday, which is taking a close look at all the ins and outs of Luke Skywalker's appearance at the end of season two of Mandalorian. So that is what we're recommending, to look at some legends, rather listen to some legends of Luke Skywalker.
Listen indeed. Download your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook. It's that time where we take a break, reset, and return with your questions here on ForceCenter.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, 4 Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4 Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
Welcome back to 4 Center, my 4 Center friends. We've looked at the news. Now we got some great questions, as always, from you out there in the 4 Center family. Joseph, what do we have?
That's right. We got two questions, or rather, two questions from Twitter, two questions from Patreon, for a total of 4 questions. I can still do math. Let's go to our first question from Twitter. It comes from Lanky S. Daw. Lanky says, do you think there is any chance that they will at some point redeem Old Man Sheev? Or is the pure evil absolutely necessary for Star Wars? Thanks, and may the Force be with you. May the Force be with you, Lanky. Ken, what do you think about that, about the possibility of redemption for Sheev? Right now, Sheev appears to be dust in the Exegol wind. but this is such a great overall question about, was that ever a possibility for Sheev, or is he just simply evil incarnate? Where do you land on that?
I wrote my notes, no. And then I did a paragraph. Look, I think we may one day get a reason for his fall, a young Palpatine series and on its own. And you know, whatever, if something pops up in the Acolyte, so be it. But I'm not anticipating that. And if we may get a reason, it might come from a real place. Might garner some sympathy or maybe just some understanding. But to me, you have to land on the end result is that he went down this path and it is evil. And I do think the story kind of needs that, at least from him. I'm not saying, again, it would be compelling. Give me a Hiddleston as young Palpatine. I'm all there for all those kind of thoughts and speculations over the years. I just don't. And you and I love Palpatine. You and I have talked about it. We love him in what he brings and what McDiarmid brings, vaudevillian type of villain. I think it's needed. I just don't ever want there to be too much room for, oh, poor Sheev, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I think so. I think that makes perfect sense. I think he is the absolute epitome of evil in Star Wars, but I think evil in Star Wars is not just this natural state, right? I don't think Sheev was born evil. I don't think anybody in Star Wars is born evil. I think that is, to me, the heart of the morality of Star Wars is that something happened to Sheev that opened him to fear, that opened him to anger. I think something happens to all of us that opens us to fear and anger on almost daily basis. And I think the great story of the dark side is he gave into that and he just never questioned it, never tried to turn back from it, had no hope, no compassion, just shut off all those things. And he made this choice. And I think there's this distinction of, you know, of how we talk about evil in storytelling. You know, and sometimes it's just there are good wizards and evil wizards, or, you know, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, functionally, when you watch the Star Wars movies, Palpatine is, yeah, can't be turned back, never has any doubt that fear and anger and control are the right way. And anybody who thinks compassion is a strength is a naive fool who doesn't understand the truth of the galaxy, that it's all just chaos and violence. And the only reasonable thing to do is to make sure that you are the one who's winning that constant battle. But he chooses that philosophy. And therefore, you know, sometimes when we're talking, I'll describe actions of the Palpatine, whether through the Clone Wars or, you know, what the Empire's doing is evil actions. But I think he is, like all of our characters in Star Wars, a being who made a choice. And I would be open to that storytelling, depending on how and when and all that, of what was it that broke him? What was it that opened up that fear that made him fall? And I think we talked about it a little bit. I think when we're talking about in one of the scene by scene episodes, when we're talking about his box of manipulations of Anakin, there does seem to be this real that his fear is a loss of power or a loss of control. Mm-hmm. And everything that he does, the Sith are all about power and control, obviously. But you know, when he wears the mask of the politician and where he, you know, sheds the mask and is just like, I am a wrinkled, old wizard. It's always about how can I have unlimited power, you know, and even the way he delights in the death of Plagueis, you know, is that Plagueis was such a fool as to drop his guard and lose his power. That I'd be really intrigued by that. I don't ever want it to be the story of like, that boy was born and he wasn't right, you know?
Yeah.
I want it to be, he could have made a different choice and he didn't, and the galaxy suffered because of it.
Yeah, yeah. Look, there's nuance to be had and there's nuance in his story, but I just love this idea of him looking into the flames and seeing the galaxy and being, I want it all, and I can't have it. If I can't have it, I want to destroy it, and I can't let go of this quest, and I can't let go of my own existence here, because I just want power. That's the ultimate goal. Unlimited power. That should be the title of the series, if we're going to get it. So, yeah, I'm with you on that. And he's intriguing. He should be analyzed. He should be looked at. And part of my answer is a little, looking out at the fandom and going, I just don't want a lot of, see, he was just misunderstood.
No, I totally understand where you're coming from. And I think understanding why somebody made a bad choice does not make it okay that they made a bad choice. I think, I'm big, I think, on this, in the story of Star Wars and often in real life it is great to have empathy and understanding for why you chose an action, mm-hmm. but then also say, but that action is unacceptable because it hurts other people. And I'd be very happy if that was a story of Palpatine where you can see, why you made those choices. It does not make those choices okay. He's not, a misunderstood, character. He's a character who chose evil repeatedly.
Over and over again. Yeah. And you and I enjoy a good Star Wars redemption story, and we have some great ones to dive into. So great stuff, Lanky.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll move on to our next question from Alejo. Alejo says, what are some of the biggest what if in Star Wars that you wonder about? It could be something within the story and or a real life what if. I constantly wonder if Toshiro Mifune did play Obi-Wan. So, Ken, where does your mind go? Do you go into the actual story of a what if from the story, or more of a, like Alejo is mentioning, a what if in real life?
I think because this, and I also saw a couple folks and folks we know in this industry who just learned the Mifune story. Like that's part of the kind of making of Star Wars legend too, that's what George wanted. And that would have changed a lot. Would have changed a lot in terms of casted and the look and feel of Star Wars. And that's something that, I obviously love Guinness and you and McGregor. I obviously love that. Goes without saying. But that's a delicious what if. And it's great that that kind of information can kind of get a new life again. So I think because of that, I didn't go into the story too much, Joseph, with this question. And I went into behind the scenes stuff. And I got to say, I think about this a lot. I don't know exactly what the answer of if it had happened, but I think of Ron Howard directing episode one, which if you believe certain tales, was something that was on the table. To what degree? We don't know. Was it a passing conversation, or was it, something that went down the path of negotiations that didn't happen and George just felt, no, I want to really put my vision out there. I think about that a lot. You and I love the prequels. You and I have come to a great spot on the prequels. And I love Phantom Menace. I think I love it more and more in a way. And it might just be because of Rats Tyrell, to be honest. But no doubt. And George will tell you, I wrote the dialogue in a certain way. The actors are acting in a certain way. It's its own nostalgia to some of the serial stuff. And I don't disagree with George at all in that, because who am I to disagree with the man in flannel? But without a doubt, on record, you listened in an interview with Harrison Ford, Carrie Fisher, Mark Hamill. George, and communicating with humans, not his favorite thing on set, all right? the faster, more intense becomes a joke for a reason. And Ron Howard, he's a actor's director. I think Bryce Dallas Howard, I think his daughter's not only keeping in that path, but I think going to eventually surpass him. I really believe there will be a point in that time where you'll look back and go, kids, do you know Bryce Dallas Howard was an actor too? Much like her father. But I think you and I grew up with Happy Days, Ron Howard, a different feel for us. He's directing Splash now. Him with working with the actors, I just wonder. I'm not saying it's better. And I just wonder what that would have made that movie feel like.
Yeah, no, I'm with that, with you on that. I love the prequels to death. I love, a lot of the visuals. I love the ideas behind the prequels. I still do think that there are some moments that come across as flat. And I know Lucas sometimes says, yeah, I know I wanted it that way. Whether or not, that's true, I think the some moments that come off a little flat or awkward are a barrier for as many people as possible to see the true beauty, the ideas of the prequels. And I think you could take the exact same script, every line of dialogue, and with an actor who is more invested in talking, or with a director who's more invested in talking to the actors, maybe something would be lost in that sort of serial feel that we've all gotten used to, but maybe it would open up everything else that is beautiful about the prequels to more people, because they wouldn't get stuck on that real surface level of, I don't like the way the kid said yippee, you know?
Yes. Yeah. And that just might be it. So there you go. That's my big what if.
That's such a fascinating one. I think for me in story, we've talked about a lot of these in recent times, but my mind wanders to what if Leia makes it to Obi-Wan, you know, and I've got various opinions on what Obi-Wan would do. I think it would put him in a really interesting spot, because I think he truly had conviction that Luke was the chosen one. I don't think he would have turned down helping Leia. I think he wanted to wait until Luke came to him mm-hmm. in some form or fashion, that the Force seemed to dictate it, but I think he'd have a real hard time leaving the planet without Luke. So I think that would be a real fun what if Leia made it to Obi-Wan. In terms of real life stuff, this is one that just jumped into my head, perhaps controversial, because it's about Star Wars, so it's controversial no matter what. I think Irvin Kershner did just such an amazing job on Empire Strikes Back of just bringing out the soul of that movie. I sometimes wonder what would Return of the Jedi look like if Irvin Kershner had directed it. You know, because I think I love Return of the Jedi. I know it's a lot of people's favorites for lots of reasons. Some of my very favorite moments in all of Star Wars are in Return of the Jedi. But every once in a while, there's like an acting choice that mm-hmm. could maybe be more soulful, in more of that kind of Empire Strikes Back feel. You know, that Kershner, again, was a real director who really, really, really spent a lot of time with the actors trying to find, you know, this kind of next level of emotional truth. Those lingering shots of, you know, Leia looking at the door of Echo Base closing, or Han looking at Luke as he walks away and just pulls out so much emotion from just silent shots. Every once in a while, I wonder, you know, what would the movie Return of the Jedi be like if it had that sort of direction?
I that's a great choice. And yeah, the story choice, Leia showing up to Kenobi, you know, I mean, what ifs always change the story, obviously, butterfly effect and whatnot, but that's a giant one. That's it. Cause I want to know what Obi-Wan, like, all right, buddy, what are you going to do now? You went out there guarding the boy. Now the girl showed up. What are you going to do now? Interesting stuff. But as far as Kershner, yeah, nothing away from the late Richard Marquand. He was in a tough spot. Stepping in there, George, without a doubt, by his own admission, micromanager, looking over shoulders and very hard probably to direct in that circumstance, even if it was a good circumstance and not one full of fighting or tension or anything like that. I think it was. But Kershner being Lucas's old teacher, one of his teachers and mentors at USC, like having the ability to push back, you get the sense that, again, no tension or fighting, but just like Kershner was like, cool, you want me to direct Empire? I will direct it. I'll do it. Let me do it. Let me do my smooching and all those things, those great, sweet interviews he gives. I think there would have been some, I think you're right, some little more depth pulled out of some of the quieter scenes. Absolutely think so.
That's a great way to say it. A little bit more depth pulled out of some of the quieter scenes. And this is not, my friends, an attack on Return of the Jedi. There are beautiful, great moments throughout Return of the Jedi. And it is a lot of people's favorite for a reason.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you too, as Luke said.
Excellent. A great question, Alejo. We'll move on to our questions from our listeners on Patreon, our patrons on Patreon. The first one comes from Laura Martin. This is kind of a different approach of a question, but I figured why not tackle it. Laura says, seeing is how both of you are writers, what would you like to write for Star Wars if given a chance? A novel, a script, an anthology of some sort, or a technical guide? What storyline or character study would you like to explore? Ken, where do you go with this?
Well, this is we got to be careful. Look, you and I have been in this business for a bit now, working on things and with various degrees of success and failures, failures than successes. That's how the business works. So this is actually a great question that I get excited about, but I will admit to keeping some cards close to the vest here. I have mentioned before, though, I am obsessed. I think some of my skills are, or an interest, maybe not even skills. I won't say skills. My interests are in the history of Star Wars. Yes, I love the themes and the moments, and that excites me. Force Center and you, Joseph, have helped that just flame burn brighter inside me as a Star Wars fan. But I do love history, putting it all together, putting the moments together, and just what can you learn about this world by its past and by its events, and even things you know and watched on screen, just putting it down in a bigger picture. So I'm interested, I think, because I'm a documentary fan. I love weird docs and I love sports documentaries. I love looking back. If you want to, anytime there's a documentary on Saturday Night Live, even though I know every story that's ever told about 75 and 76 and some of my favorite books to read, I'm fascinated by that. And could you apply that to not the behind the scenes of the making of Star Wars, but actually in story, telling the tale? And I've mentioned before, but like George R. R. Martin's done with his own work, Fire and Blood, is I love Fire and Blood, and a lot of people didn't. I love it because it's a history book it's a fictitious history book, and it worked for me, and it's exciting, and it helps you analyze the big themes and the characters even more. So that's something, a direction I would go in.
Yeah, man, this is so great that this question, we picked this question for this episode, that you started by talking about Spinal Tap. So now I'm just imagining you making the Max Rebo version of Spinal Tap.
Oh, there you go. Hold on.
Max Rebo getting lost in the tunnels under Jabba's palace, trying to get up there.
Mos Eisley! Let's
talk! Yeah, but yeah, no, I know exactly what you're saying. I think that is such an interesting and rich perspective on Star Wars. And it's something that's kind of been dabbled at in books, in comics, of meeting journalists and, actors and people who kind of create art within the world of Star Wars. And that would be really fascinating to see a behind the scenes documentary of some big public event that is famous in the world of Star Wars. Is such a great and interesting idea. This question it's a really interesting one to approach, because the knee jerk response is just like, yes, of course. And here are all of my Star Wars ideas. And we do get a lot of questions about, like, well, pitch us this. And sometimes I think we both get excited and we kind of start laying out a pitch on the podcast. But it is a thing to be gentle about, because for myself, I would absolutely love to write a Star Wars thing. And that is, a goal that would be a wonderful thing to happen. I would love for that to happen. Right now, where I am in my career, I talk about it a little bit, but not a lot, because there's only so much that I can say and there's only so much to be said. But, I am fighting the good fight here in Hollywood, done some writing for that animated show on Adult Swim. I've got, other things that I am actively pitching. I have movie scripts that are actively being read, and one always hopes that you'll reach a level of success that you could get an opportunity. And I would take an opportunity. Laura asks about, what medium we would like to write, as well as what story. I'd be happy to write any medium of Star Wars. But right now in my career, what I'm really working on is, television and film and screenwriting. And I would love that opportunity. And sometimes I have to check myself on the podcast because, in an ideal world, there's an opportunity to actually be in an office making this pitch. Yeah. And I have to be careful to not be like, yeah, I've talked about it 72 times on my podcast.
Yeah.
But to answer Laura's question, I really, really, I love the Jedi. And I think there are so many stories about different individual Jedi and how they relate to the bigger philosophy of the Jedi, and therefore the philosophy of Star Wars. And yet still each one of them is their own unique character with their own unique background, their own unique relationships. That's what I'm so excited about in the High Republic. So I think that's the kind of story that I would like to tell. The other thing being, I have mentioned this on the show before, of I did do some work on a stage play for Obi-Wan Kenobi's perspective. That was something that James Arnold Taylor was interested in pursuing, and I worked on it, and it was great fun. It was really, really fun to actually just get in and dabble in the world of Star Wars. Right now, there's no way forward for that project, but it did whet my appetite for, like, ooh, yeah. It's fun to roll up your sleeves and get in there.
Yeah, we'd love to roll up our sleeves and get in there.
Yeah, yeah. Which is not to take away from how much we just love being fans and talking about Star Wars as well. Like many things in life, it requires balance, right, Ken?
Yeah, look, I grew up loving Disneyland. I never wanted a job there. I'll just say that, because that's just sometimes the way life is. You know, I love pro wrestling until you run a locker room.
Yes, yes. And honestly, I think there it's been great to do the podcast and to we get questions about it. We talk about it to make Star Wars a part of our life in this way of like, yeah. You know, we watch it as fans, but then also like we got to prep. We got to take notes. We're going to talk about the podcast. We got to be prepared for this. We got to do our homework and then still have those anchors where you never forget you're a fan, never lose your joy for the thing and how it entered your life when you were a kid.
100%.
Yeah. So we're gonna move on to our final question. Thank you so much for asking that question, Laura. It is great to address it openly. And our final question is from Andrew McNabb. Andrew says, "Bright Suns, hope this finds you safe, well, and happy. What is your Venn diagram of thoughts, feelings, and hopes about the similarities and differences between Luke in The Last Jedi and Obi-Wan in his forthcoming show? Both characters have had to deal with losing an apprentice to the dark side. And while we already have a window into Luke's grief, I was wondering how you think their different experiences and personalities will affect how they each deal with a similar trauma. Thank you kindly." Great Obi-Wan question, Andrew. Ken, what are your thoughts on that?
He mentioned grief, so there's kind of the connection, but I think there is, you know, I don't say there's a stoicism to Obi-Wan. He's a very sassy, passionate man at times. I just think he comes to a better spot of finding the way to move forward. And so that's what I look at their different experiences. He's seen successes, Luke's successes, seen successes within the Jedi Order. Luke in The Last Jedi, we're going to maybe find out more. It was all on his own, you know, even though he maybe had some Force ghosts whispering in his ear. So there's just a different background knowing of, hey, when it goes bad, you know how to get back to good, if that makes any sense for me. So that's kind of where I see it. I know you and I both hope the Obi-Wan series will deal with Obi-Wan coming to a better place. So I'm fascinated by the fact that at one point he thinks I'm lost in the failure. I can't have this again. Maybe he rejects the idea of, yeah, I'll protect Luke. I don't want anything to happen to that poor kid, but I don't want to teach him. Maybe he has some of that connection too. And then that he just knows the textbook way of how to go forward, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting because I think that is so key of they come from such a different perspective of Obi-Wan growing up in the Order and every once in a while questioning or pushing back, but for the most part being like, what? No, the Jedi Order has been around forever. They're doing things right. I'm trying to listen. I'm trying to be a good Jedi Knight. I'm trying to be a good Jedi Master. And then it all falls apart around him. These, you know, this, you know, years and years of tradition. And then Luke is going around trying to figure out old tradition, merge it with new tradition, build something new that also respects the old. It's those are very different positions. I think the big picture thing for me is I love how much Luke's mistakes are based on this well-intentioned obsession with mastery. You know, I've talked about it before on, you know, in Empire Strikes Back, where that's where Yoda is really like, you know, it takes the most serious mind. You have to concentrate. You can't run off. You can't be cocky. And you can't want adventure. And Luke really tries to master those things. And in that one moment, he has, to me, an understandable just split second of he sees all the horror that Ben Solo is going to bring as Kylo Ren and ignites the blade for just a second. And then immediately goes, of course not, and turns it off. And it's that one moment where he failed in his mastery and he loses everything because of it. And I think Luke is just so hard on himself of like, yeah, absolutely. He probably should have found a way to get through to Ben, you know, sooner when he saw the darkness, you know, in his training, in flashes and all that. But it is just this one moment where he failed at being a master and it just destroys him. Whereas Obi-Wan has just this, I think this much more complex, like relationship with the Jedi Order and a more complex relationship with Anakin and I think Obi-Wan has a real complex guilt because he can feel guilty both ways, because he cut his friend down and almost killed him, but didn't. And I think that there's a good possibility that the Kenobi show would wrestle with that. If they don't, I'll accept that and accept the story that the storytellers choose to tell me. But I really think there's a power in, I cut him down, but I can't bring myself to just end him. And yeah. So Obi-Wan's left feeling guilty about Anakin's fall, and that he couldn't save him. And then also he couldn't bring himself to fully stop the threat of Vader either. So I think he's got a different kind of guilt to wrestle with. And then the last thing I'll say is, you know, as much as Obi-Wan preaches patience, and we get to see him be patient in contrast to Anakin being really rash in lots of the prequels and Clone Wars storytelling, Obi-Wan is also Mr. Spring the Trap. Obi-Wan is Mr., you know, let me go to the bar and make myself a target. He's restless. That part of him that's hopping up and down, ready to fight Darth Maul and Phantom Menace, you know, behind the laser gate, I don't think that part of him ever goes away. And I think, you know, Luke is really, you know, really just wants to be done, wants to wash his hands of it. I think Obi-Wan is like, on Tatooine is restless of like, well, I'm here on this mission to watch over the kid and maybe train him. Okay, Owen doesn't want me to train him and I need to respect that. Vader's out there. I'm wrestling with all that. And I think, again, it might be a motivation of the Kenobi series of him being a little bit more restless and going, I'm going to try to fix this mistake. And then somehow in that story, coming to a more peaceful place and accepting that I have to, you know, accept my mistakes. I can't save Anakin, but I can be here for Luke and I'm going to patiently wait for him.
The Restless Bouncing of Kenobi is the subtitle for the series. I heard. I got it under authority. Go.
Yeah. Obi-Wan Kenobi, Restless Bouncing. I think that is just going to drive subscribers to Disney Plus like mad.
Yeah, no, that's great, because I think, you know, it's always interesting to see, and this gets thrown in my face. Sometimes I'll bring it up even just jokingly with Grace or something like that, of just like, you know, Qui-Gon, be like Qui-Gon, go to your knees and take a deep breath and meditate. It's like, well, yeah, he died. Kenobi won. And it's like, well, yeah. But I think that's a part of Kenobi. You're so right. It is. He had the, you know, relationship with Satine, which is about passion and attachment and some things he's trained against. And so I think there's constant battle of pushing down some natural instincts, which is not a bad thing in life, but it can also be a dangerous thing. And so that's part of the battle with Kenobi.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm so excited for that show, because I think there's so much to explore. And I think Andrew's question really taps into that. And I think what's great about Andrew's question and making these comparisons between Obi-Wan and Luke is, not only is this Obi-Wan show going to be really interesting and insightful for Kenobi fans, but I think it's going to have some great Star Wars poetry that's going to speak to The Last Jedi and speak to Yoda's choices to be on Dagobah and all that kind of stuff. So I'm so excited for it. Any final thoughts on that one, Ken?
No, great stuff from Andrew.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you to everyone for our questions. Andrew, Laura, Alejo, and Lanky, all great Star Wars questions.
Yes, and if you have a question for us, you can find the way to get to us. It's on our Twitter page. It's pinned to the top. Force Center Pod on Twitter. You can like our Instagram page, like our Facebook page at Force Center Podcast. And of course, if you want to ask us questions, you can support on Patreon at patreon.com/Force Center. Find the tier that best suits your needs and desires to support the show directly. Podcasts available in a lot of spots, including Anchor, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, and now Amazon Music. We have merch available at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. Got our own stuff going on as well. You can follow me at Ken Napsok, or go to kennapsok.com. We always like to highlight charities, but for right now, I'll just say go to the charity spotlight tab on my website. A lot of things me, friends, or listeners of the Napsok Files have recommended as different charities to choose from. Joseph.
Yeah, you can find me Twitter and Instagram at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for lots of other comedy adventures. On New Year's Eve, I'm doing an online show with my friends, The Double Click. So if you want some New Year's Eve comedy music, we're going to play a fun comedy role-playing game, all sorts of just having a little bit of fun at the end of a challenging year. You can find that ticket link on my website, josephscrimshaw.com.
Do it, my friends. Do it. Hey, big deep dive this week. More about Luke, Jedis, the Jedi way, hubris. Oh, well, there's going to be a lot of discussions of hubris. Going to be fun. So pay attention to that one coming your way. We want to give a special shout out to Jennifer Landa. You can follow Jen online at all the places as well. We appreciate her taking the time out of her busy schedule in life to comment on some of the big things and help us look back. So thank you, Jen. We'll see you soon. So for Cassian Andor and The Volume, this has been Force.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.